"They're sisters," said Magrat. Her tea had gone cold. "I don't know," said Ella. "They look alike. They keep themselves to themselves most of the time. But I can feel them watching. They're very good at watching."
"And they make you do all the work," she said.
"Well, I only have to cook for myself and the outside staff," said Ella, "and I don't mind cleaning and laundry all that much."
"Do they do their own cooking, then?"
"I don't think so. They walk around the house at night after I've gone to bed. Godmother Lilith says I must be kind to them and pity them because they can't talk, and always see that we've got plenty of cheese in the larder."
"They eat nothing but cheese," said Magrat.
"I don't think so," said Ella.
"I should think the rats and mice get it, then, in an old place like this."
"You know, it's a funny thing," said Ella, "but I've never seen a mouse anywhere in this house."
Magrat shivered. She felt watched.
"Why don't you just walk away?" "I would."
"Where to? Anyway, they always find me, or they send the coachman and grooms after me."
"Oh, that's horrible.
I'm sure they think that sooner or later I'll marry anyone to get away from laundry," said Ella. "Not that the prince's clothes get washed, I expect," she added bitterly. "I expect they get burned after he's worn them."
"What you want to do is make a career of your own," said Magrat, encouragingly, to keep her spirits up. "You want to be your own woman. You want to emancipate yourself."
"I don't think I want to do that," said Ella, speaking with caution in case it was a sin to offend a fairy godmother.
"You do, really," said Magrat.
"Do I?"
"Yes."
"Oh.
You don't have to marry anyone you don't want to."
Ella sat back.
"How good are you?" she said.
Well, I suppose I..."
"The dress arrived yesterday," said Ella. "It's up in the big front room on a stand so it doesn't get creased, so that it stays perfect. And they've polished up the coach specially. They've hired extra footmen too."
"Yes, but perhaps..."
"I think I'm going to have to marry someone I don't want to," said Ella.
Granny Weatherwax strode up and down the driftwood balcony. The whole shack trembled to her stamping. Ripples spread out as it bounced on the water. "Of course you don't remember her," she shouted. "Our mam kicked her out when she was 13. We was both tiny then, but I remember the rows. I used to hear them when I was in bed. She was wanton."
"You always used to say I was wanton when we was younger," said Nanny.
Granny hesitated, caught momentarily off balance. Then she waved a hand irritably. "You was, of course," she said dismissively. "But you never used magic for it, did you?"
"Didn't have to," said Nanny happily. "An off-the-shoulder dress did the trick most of the time."
"Right off the shoulder and onto the grass, as I recall," said Granny. "No, she used magic. Not just ordinary magic, neither. Oh, she was willful."
Nanny Ogg was about to say, "What, you mean not compliant and self-effacing like what you is, Esme?" But she stopped herself. You didn't juggle matches in a fireworks factory.
"Young men's fathers used to come round to complain," said Granny darkly.
"They never came round to complain about me," said Nanny happily.
"And always looking at herself in mirrors," said Granny. "Prideful as a cat she was. Prefer to look in a mirror than out of a window, she would."
"What's her name?"
"Lily."
"That's a nice name," said Nanny.
"It isn't what she calls herself now," said Mrs. Goggle. "I bet it isn't."
"And she's like in charge of the city?" said Nanny.
"She was bossy, too."
"What does she want to be in charge of a city for?" said Nanny.
"She's got plans," said Mrs. Goggle. "And vain, really vain," said Granny, apparently to the world in general.
"Did you know she was here?" said Nanny.
"I had a feeling. Mirrors."
"Mirror magic isn't bad," protested Nanny. "I've done all kinds of stuff with mirrors. You can have a lot of fun with a mirror."
"She doesn't just use one mirror," said Mrs. Goggle.
"Oh,
she uses two."
"Oh, that's different."
Granny stared at the surface of the water. Her own face stared back at her from the darkness. She hoped it was her own face, anyway.
"I've felt her watching us the whole way here," she said. "That's where she's happiest, inside mirrors. Inside mirrors making people into stories."
She prodded the image with a stick. "She even got a look at me in Desiderata's house just before Magrat came in. It ain't nice seeing someone else in your reflection." She paused.
"Where is Magrat, anyway?"
"Out fairy godmothering, I think," said Nanny. "She said she didn't need any help."
Magrat was annoyed. She was also frightened, which made her even more annoyed. It was hard for people when Magrat was annoyed. It was like being attacked by a damp tissue.
"You have my personal word on it," she said. "You don't have to go to the ball if you don't want to."
"You won't be able to stop them," said Ella darkly. "I know how things work in this city."
"Look, I said you won't have to go," said Magrat.
She looked thoughtful.
"There isn't someone else you'd rather marry, is there?"
"No, I don't know many people. I don't get much chance."
"Good," said Magrat. "That makes it easier. I suggest we get you out of here and take you somewhere else."
"There isn't anywhere else, I told you. There's just swamp. I tried once or twice and they sent the coachman after me. They weren't unkind. The coachman, I mean. They're just afraid. Everyone's afraid. Even the sisters are afraid, I think."
Magrat looked around at the shadows.
"What of?" she said.
"They say that people disappear if they upset the Duke. Something happens to them. Everyone's very polite in Genua," said Ella sourly. "And no one steals, and no one raises their voice, and everyone stays indoors at night, except when it's Fat Tuesday," she sighed. "Now that's something I'd like to go to the carnival. They always make me stay in, though. But I hear it passing through the city, and I think, that's what Genua ought to be. Not a few people dancing in palaces, but everyone dancing in the streets."
Magrat shook herself. She felt a long way from home.
"I think perhaps I might need a bit of help with this one," she said.
"You've got a wand," said Ella.
"I think there's times when you need more than a wand," said Magrat.
She stood up.
"But I'll tell you this," she said. "I don't like this house. I don't like this city."
"Emberella?"
"Yes?"
"You won't go to the ball. I'll make sure of that."
She turned around.
"I told you," murmured Ella, looking down. "You can't even hear them."
One of the sisters was at the top of the steps leading into the kitchen. Her gaze was fixed immovably on Magrat. They say that everyone has the attributes of some kind of animal. Magrat possibly had a direct mental link to some small furry creature. She felt the terror of all small rodents in the face of unblinking death. Modulated over the menace of the gaze were all sorts of messages: the uselessness of flight, the stupidity of resistance, the inevitability of oblivion. She knew she could do nothing. Her legs weren't under her control. It was as if commands were coming straight down that stair and into her spinal cord. The sense of helplessness was almost peaceful.
"Blessings be upon this house!"
The sister spun around much faster than any human should be able to move. Granny Weatherwax pushed open the door.
"Oh, dearie me!" she thundered. "And Lorks!"
"Yeah," said Nanny Ogg, crowding through the doorway behind her. "Lorks, too!"
"We're just a couple of old beggar women," said Granny, striding across the floor.
"Begging from house to house," said Nanny Ogg, "not coming directly here by any manner or means."
They each caught one of Magrat's elbows and lifted her off her feet. Granny turned her head.
"What about you, miss?"
Ella shook her head without looking up.
"No," she said, "I mustn't come."
Granny's eyes narrowed. "I suppose not," she said. "We all have our path to walk, or so it is said, although not by me. Come, Githa."
"We're just off," said Nanny Ogg, brightly.
They turned. Another sister appeared in the doorway.
"Ye gods," said Nanny Ogg. "I never saw her move."
"We was just going out," said Granny Weatherwax loudly, "if it's all the same with you, milady."
She met the stare head on. The air tingled. Then Granny Weatherwax said between gritted teeth,
"When I say run, Githa."
"I hear you," said Nanny.
Granny groped behind her and found the teapot Magrat had just used. She weighed it in her hands, keeping the movement slow and gentle.
"Ready, Githa?"
"Where, Tin, Esme?"
"Run."
Granny hurled the teapot high into the air. The heads of both sisters snapped around. Nanny Og helped the stumbling Magrat out of the door. Granny slammed it shut as the nearest sister darted forward, mouth open, too late.
"We're leaving the girl in there," shouted Nanny as they ran down the drive.
"They're guarding her," said Granny. "They're not going to harm her."
"I ain't seen teeth like those on anyone before," said Nanny.
"That's 'cause they ain't anyone. They're snakes."
They reached the comparative security of the roadway and leaned against the wall.
"Snakes?"
Nanny wheezed. Magrat opened her eyes.
"It's Lily's doing," said Granny. "She was good at that kind of thing, I remember."
"Really? Snakes?"
"Yeah," said Granny darkly. "She made friends easily."
"Blimey, I couldn't do that."
"She didn't used to be able to do it either for more than a few seconds. That's what using mirrors does for you."
Magrat stuttered.
"You're all right," said Nanny.
She looked up at Esme Weatherwax.
"We shouldn't leave the girl, whatever you say, in a house with snakes walking around thinking they're human," she said.
"It's worse than that. They're walking around thinking they're snakes," said Granny.
"Well, whatever. You never do that sort of thing. The worst you ever did was to make people a bit confused about what they was."
"That's because I'm the good one," said Granny bitterly.
Magrat shuddered.
"So, are we going to get her out?"
said Nanny.
"Not yet. There's going to be a proper time," said Granny. "Can you hear me, Magrat Garlic?"
"Yes, Granny," said Magrat.
"We've got to go somewhere and talk," said Granny, "about stories."
"What about stories?"
said Magrat.
"Lily is using them," said Granny. "Don't you see that? You can feel it in this whole country. The stories collect round here because here's where they find a way out. She feeds them. Look, she don't want your Ella to marry that duck man just because of politics or something. That's just an explanation. It's not a reason. She wants the girl to marry the prince because that's what the story demands."
"What's in it for her?" said Nanny.
"In the middle of them all, the fairy godmother or the wicked witch, you remember? That's where Lily is putting herself, like...
She paused, trying to find the right word.
"Remember that time last year when the circus thing came to Lancre?"
"I remember," said Nanny. "Them girls in the spangly tights, and the fellows pouring whitewash down the trousers. Never saw a elephant, though. They said there'd be elephants, and there weren't any. It had elephants on the posters. I spent all tuppence, and there wasn't a single elephant."
"Yes. But what I'm saying," said Granny, as they hurried along the street, "is there was that man in the middle, you remember, with the moustache and the big hat?"
"Him? But he didn't do anything much," said Nanny. "He just stood in the middle of the tent, and sometimes he cracked his whip, and all the acts just went on round him."
"That's why he was the most important one there," said Granny. "It was the things going on around him that made him important."
"What's Lily feeding the stories?" said Magrat.
"People," said Granny. She frowned. "Stories," she said. "Well, we'll have to see about that."
Green twilight covered Genua. The mists curled up from the swamp. Torches flared in the streets. In dozens of yards, shadowy figures moved, pulling the covers off floats. In the darkness, there was a flash of sequins and a jingle of bells. All year the people of Genua were nice and quiet, but history has always allowed the downtrodden one night somewhere in any calendar to restore temporarily the balance of the world. It might be called the Feast of Fools, or the King of the Bean, or even Samedi Nuit Mort, when even those with the most taxing and responsible of duties can kick back and have fun. Well, most of them, anyway. The coachmen and the footmen were sitting in their shed at one side of the stable yard, eating their dinner and complaining about having to work on dead night. They were also engaging in the time-honoured rituals that go therewith, which largely consist of finding out what their wives have packed for them today and envying the other men whose wives obviously cared more. The head footman raised a crust, cautiously.
"I've got chicken neck and pickle," he said. "Anyone got cheese?"
The second coachman inspected his box.
"Oh, it's boiled bacon again," he complained. "She always gives me boiled bacon. She knows I don't like it. She don't even cut the fat off."
"Is it thick white fat?" said the first coachman.
"Yeah, horrible. Is this right for a holiday feast or what?"
"I'll swap you a lettuce and tomato."
"Right. What you got, Jimmy?"
The underfootman shyly opened his perfect package. There were 4 sandwiches, crusts cut off. There was a sprig of parsley. There was even a napkin.
Smoked salmon and cream cheese, he said.
And still a bit of the wedding cake, said the first coachman. Ain't you et that all up yet?
We have it every night, said the underfootman.
The shed shook with the ensuing laughter. It is a universal fact that any innocent comment made by any recently married young member of any workforce is an instant trigger for coarse merriment among his or her older and more cynical colleagues. This happens even if everyone concerned has 9 legs and lives at the bottom of an ocean of ammonia on a huge cold planet. It's just one of those things.
You make the most of it, said the second coachman gloomily
when they'd settled down again.
It starts off kisses and cake and them cutting the crusts off. And next thing you know, it's down to tongue pie, cold bum and the copper stick. The way I see it, the first coachman began, it's all about the way you...
There was a knocking at the door. The underfootman, being the junior member, got up and opened it.
It's an old crone, he said. What do you want, old crone?
Fancy a drink, said Nanny Ogg. She held up a jug over which hung a perceptible haze of evaporating alcohol and blew a paper squeaker.
What?
Said the footman.
Shame for you lads to be working. It's holiday. Whoopee!
What's going on? The senior coachman began, and then he entered the cloud of alcohol.
Gods! What is that stuff?
Smells like rum, Mr. Travis.
The senior coachman hesitated. From the streets came music and laughter as the first of the processions got underway. Fireworks popped across the sky. It wasn't a night to be without just a sip of alcohol.
What a nice old lady, he said.
Nanny Ogg waved the jug again.
Up your eye, she said. Mud in your bottom.
What might be called the classical witch comes in 2 basic varieties, the complicated and the simple. Or to put it another way, the ones that have a room full of regalia and the ones that don't. Magrat was by inclination one of the former sort. For example, take magical knives. She had a complete collection of magical knives, all with the appropriate coloured handles and complicated runes all over them. It had taken many years under the tutelage of Granny Weatherwax for Magrat to learn that the common kitchen bread knife was better than the most ornate of magic knives. It could do all that the magical knife could do, plus you could also use it to cut bread. Every established kitchen has 1 ancient knife, its handle worn thin, its blade curved like a banana, and so inexplicably sharp that reaching into the drawer at night is like bobbing for apples in a piranha tank. Magrat had hers stuck in her belt. Currently, she was 30 feet above the ground, 1 hand holding onto a broomstick, the other onto a drainpipe, both legs dangling. Housebreaking ought to be easy when you had a broomstick, but this did not appear to be the case. Finally, she got both legs around the pipe and a firm grip on a timely gargoyle. She waggled the knife in between the 2 halves of the window and lifted the latch. After a certain amount of grunting, she was inside, leaning against the wall and panting. Blue lights flashed in front of her eyes, echoing the fireworks that laced the night outside. Granny had kept on asking her if she was sure she wanted to do this. And she was amazed to find that she was sure, even if the snake women were already wandering around the house. Being a witch meant going into places you didn't want to go. She opened her eyes. There was the dress in the middle of the floor on a dressmaker's dummy. A Clatchian candle burst over Genua. Green and red stars exploded in the velvet darkness and lit up the gems and silks in front of Magrat. It was the most beautiful thing she'd ever seen. She crept forward, her mouth dry. Warm mists rolled through the swamp. Mrs. Gogol stirred the cauldron.
"What are they doing?" said Saturday.
"Stopping the story," she said. "Or maybe not." She stood up. "One way or another, it's our time now. Let's go to the clearing." She looked at Saturday's face. "Are you frightened?"
"I know what will happen afterwards," said the zombie. "Even if we win."
"We both do, but we've had 12 years."
"Yes. We've had 12 years.
And Ella will rule the city."
"Yes."
In the coachman's shed, Nanny Ogg and the coachman were getting along, as she put it, like a maison en flambe. The underfootman smiled vaguely at the wall and slumped forward.
"That's young people today," said the head coachman, trying to fish his wig out of his mug. "Can't hold their stuff."
"Have a hair of the dog, Mr. Travis," said Nanny, filling the mug. "Or scale of the alligator, or whatever you call it in these parts."
"Reckon," said the senior footman, "we should be getting the coaches ready.
Who would you say?"
"Reckon you've got time for one more yet," said Nanny Ogg.
"Very generous," said the coachman. "Very generous. Here's looking at you, Mrs. Gore."
Magrat had dreamed of dresses like this. In the pit of her soul, in the small hours of the night, she danced with princes. Not shy, hard-working princes like Verence back home, but real ones with crystal blue eyes and white teeth. And she'd worn dresses like this, and they had fitted. She stared at the ruched sleeves, the embroidered bodice, the fine white lace. It was all a world away from her, well, Nanny Ogg kept calling them magrats, but they were trousers, and very practical. As if being practical mattered at all. She stared for a long time. Then, with tears streaking her face and changing colour as they caught the light of the fireworks, she took the knife and began to cut the dress into very small pieces. The senior coachman's head bounced gently off his sandwiches. Nanny Ogg stood up a little unsteadily. She placed the junior footman's wig under his slumbering head, because she was not an unkind woman. Then she stepped out into the night. A figure moved near the wall.
"Magrat?" hissed Nanny.
"Nanny?
Did you see to the dress?
Have you seen to the footman?"
"Right then," said Granny Weatherwax, stepping out of the shadows. "Then there's just the coach."
She tiptoed theatrically to the coach house and opened the door. It grated loudly on the cobbles.
"Shh," said Nanny.
There was a stub of candle and some matches on a ledge. Magrat fumbled the candle alight. The coach lit up like a glitter ball. It was excessively ornate, as if someone had taken a perfectly ordinary coach and then gone insane with fretwork and gold paint. Granny Weatherwax walked around it.
"A bit showy," she said.
"Seems a real shame to smash it up," said Nanny sadly.
She rolled up her sleeves and then, as an afterthought, tucked the hem of her skirt into her drawers.
"Bound to be a hammer around here somewhere," she said, turning to the benches along the walls.
"Don't! That'd make too much noise,"
hissed Magrat. "Hang on a moment." She pulled the despised wand out of her belt, gripped it tightly and waved it towards the coach. There was a brief inrush of air.
"Blow me down," said Nanny Ogg. "I never would have thought of that."
On the floor was a large orange pumpkin.
"It was nothing,"
said Magrat, risking a touch of pride.
"Huh, that's one coach that'll never roll again,"
said Nanny.
"Hey, can you do that to horses, too?" said Granny.
Magrat shook her head.
I think that would be very cruel."
You're right, said Granny. "No excuse for cruelty to dumb animals."
The two stallions watched her with equine curiosity as she undid the loose box gates.
"Off you go," she said. "Big green fields out there somewhere."
She glanced momentarily at Magrat.
"You have been m-horsipated."
This didn't seem to have much effect. Granny sighed. She climbed up onto the wooden wall that separated the boxes, reached up, grabbed a horse ear in either hand, and gently dragged their heads down level with her mouth. She whispered something. The stallions turned and looked at one another in the eye. Then they looked down at Granny. She grinned at them and nodded. Then, it is impossible for a horse to go instantly from a standing start to a gallop, but they almost managed it.
"What on earth did you say to them?" said Magrat.
"Mystic horseman's word," said Granny. "Passed down to Githers Jason, who passed it up to me. Works every time."
"He told you it?" said Nanny.
"Yes."
"What, all of it?"
"Yes,"
said Granny smugly. Magrat tucked the wand back into her belt. As she did so, a square of white material fell onto the floor. White gems and silk glimmered in the candlelight as she reached down hurriedly to pick it up. But there wasn't a lot that escaped Granny Weatherwax. She sighed.
"Magrat Garlic," she began.
"Yes," said Magrat meekly. "Yes, I know. I'm a wet hen."
Nanny patted her gently on the shoulder.
"Never mind," she said. "We've done a good night's work here. That Ella has about as much a chance of being sent to the ball tonight as I have of becoming queen."
"No dress, no footman, no horses, and no coach," said Granny. "I'd like to see her get out of that one, eh? Stories."
"So what are we going to do now?" said Magrat as they crept out of the yard. "It's fat lunchtime," said Nanny. "Hot diggity pig." Grebo wandered out of the darkness and rubbed against her legs. "I thought Lily was trying to stamp it out," said Magrat.
"May as well try and stamp out a flood," said Nanny. "Kick out a jam." "I don't agree with dancing in the streets," said Granny. "How much of that rum did you drink?"
"Oh, come on, Esme," said Nanny. "They say if you can't have a good time in Genoa, you're probably dead." She thought about Saturday. "You can probably have a bit of quiet fun, even if you are dead in Genoa."
"Hadn't we better stay here, though?" said Magrat, "just to make sure."
Granny Weatherwax hesitated.
"What do you think, Esme?" said Nanny Ogg. "You think she's going to be sent to the ball in a pumpkin, eh? Get a few mice to pull it, eh?"
A vision of the snake women floated across Granny Weatherwax's mind, and she hesitated. But after all, it had been a long day, and it was ridiculous when you came to think about it.
"Well, all right," she said, "but I'm not going to kick any jam, you understand."
"There's dancing and all sorts," said Nanny.
"And banana drinks, I expect," said Magrat.
"It's a million to one chance, yes," said Nanny Ogg happily. Lilith de Temskire smiled at herself in the double mirror.
"Oh, dearie me," she said. "No coach, no dress, no horses. What is a poor old godmother to do? Dearie me, and probably Lorks."
She opened a small leather case, such as a musician might use to carry his very best piccolo. There was a wand in there, the twin of the one carried by Magrat. She took it out and gave it a couple of twists, moving the gold and silver rings into a new position. The clicking sounded like the nastiest pump-action mechanism.
"And me with nothing but a pumpkin, too," said Lilith.
And, of course, the difference between sapient and non-sapient things was that while it was hard to change the shape of the former, it was not actually impossible. It was just a matter of changing a mental channel. Whereas a non-sapient thing, like a pumpkin, and it was hard to imagine anything less sapient than a pumpkin, could not be changed by any magic short of sorcery. Unless its molecules remembered a time when they weren't a pumpkin. She laughed, and a billion reflected Liliths laughed with her, all around the curve of the mirror universe.